I want to read to you this morning from Ecclesiastes chapter 3. This chapter has been used down through the years as an inspiration to all of us, and it says so much. We have used it before, and no doubt we will use it many times again. This morning there's a special reason for my using it, because I want to take as my subject God's perfect timing. To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get, and a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to rend, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also he hath set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken away from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before him. That which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been. And God requireth that which is past. And moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. I said in mine heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. I said in mine heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them, and that they might see that they themselves are beasts. For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts. Every one thing, even one thing, befalleth them. As the one dieth, so dieth the other. Yea, they have all one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity. All go unto one place, all are the dust, and all turn to dust again. Who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, and the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion. For who shall bring him to see what shall be after him? I'd like also to read to you a little thing which is written in unity. It's beautiful. God is constantly pouring out his gift of life to me. Today it is my good pleasure to accept this life that flows in and through me, healing me and sustaining me in vigor, vim, and vitality. I can best accept God's gift of life by becoming still, by feeling this life flowing through me, touching each cell of my body with its rejuvenating power. In the stillness of prayer, my mind and emotions are quickened, so that it is easy for me to accept the truth that God's perfect life is the only activity within me. In quietness and in stillness, I feel my whole being unified with life. I am set free from the anxieties and fear that cause sickness and disease. Whatever the need, God's life is greater. I am filled with the sure knowledge that I am healed and made whole. I give my attention to God's gift of life to me. my inner and joyous song of praise to God for his gift of life increases its activity in me until my whole being is charged with radiant wholeness. As you know, I was out of town this last week, and I had some tremendous experiences in God. I've had almost no sleep since I saw you last, maybe one night, reasonably so, because God had me looking after Mary's father. He had had two relapses this last week, and if I had not been there, he wouldn't be alive this moment. This I know beyond all doubt. And it was not I who did it. It was God who did it. I can assure you this. You see, when he first had his coronary thrombosis, Mary called me and told me, and I cried over the telephone because my love for him is very great. And so Mary said she was going down on Friday, and I said I would go with her. And I did this because I felt complete inner direction that this is the thing that I must do. And God said, unless you go down there and take him in your arms and pour the power of God, myself, in him, he will not live. And so I went down there, and he looked really like death warmed over. He could scarcely speak above a whisper. His face was really the color of death. His eyes had no light in them, and he was in rather a sorry shape. And so I did as God had directed me, even in Seattle. I knelt down, and I took him in my arms, and I cried over him. And then I went out and sat in the little chapel in the hospital, and I prayed for him, and I cried over him some more. And then I went back, and I did it again and again. And while I was there, I told him he was going to be all right, because God had told me so. And that if he would make the effort to get out of this, that I would make the effort to go down to their 50th wedding anniversary, to which I had been invited before, and which invitation I had refused because I have a Sunday morning service. And with me, God comes before pleasure in every single instance. But this night, God said, it was that way then, but now you must promise him that you will go down. So I did. So that's why I went, to keep my word to God. And as I said, I have chosen this subject of God's perfect timing because there can be no doubt in anybody's mind that when it is God's will that something will happen, no power on earth will stay it. I had no idea at that time why I was supposed to go down to that anniversary party, but Raymond and Oval had been home just a week. Both of them had been in the hospital. They had both had the flu in the meantime. They were both very weak. And so God got them through this anniversary party just beautifully. It was a beautiful affair. Mary put it on for them in gratitude for all they had done for her and the love they had given her. And the whole church group was invited at a Methodist church. There were over 100 people there. And it was simply wonderful. And because of their weakened condition, the minister had asked that a platform be built up higher, and they sat on two comfortable chairs so that the people could come up and greet them and they wouldn't be overstrained. Strangely enough, 3 years ago, Raymond had come to me and he said, Mother, would you please ask God if we can live until our 50th wedding anniversary because it is Oval's wish so greatly. She's looked forward to this for years. So I said, yes, I will. And it was a little touch and go as to whether or not that request was going to be granted, but it was. And so I rejoiced doubly because God had answered my prayer. And they were just so thrilled and had such a wonderful time. So Mary went home and I was left alone with them. And I had, as I said, one good night's sleep, and then it all started. And Raymond had a relapse. And the strange part of it was that God didn't let me sleep because I was in one room with two closed doors between us. He and Oval were in the other room. And yet there I was, getting everything that was going on with him. And I got up and checked on him all through the night. And one night, I had slept briefly. All of a sudden, God wakened me.
And I knew I had to go in immediately. And I went in, and he gasped out that he was in trouble. He couldn't breathe. We found out later that his lungs had filled with water. The doctor had told him to take 3 aspirins 4 times a day, and this is considered to be a blood thinner. And they use that in place of Coumadin a great deal these days, which has dangerous side effects. But somehow, something was wrong as far as that aspirin was concerned inside of myself. It could be a blood thinner, but I know from my own experience with aspirin that it relaxes you. And I kept telling him all the time that something was wrong and it had to do with the aspirin. So, in the middle of the night, he had this terrific attack. We called his doctor in Forest Grove. The doctor was out hunting. So we got the other heart specialist there, and he immediately prescribed digitalis. So the emergency was gotten over, but he still didn't feel it as he should. And he kept feeling this way and having one little spell after another. So finally, we had to call his doctor in the middle of the night. He'd come back from hunting, and he told us to come over the next day, which was Friday, at 11:30. So I drove them over to Forest Grove, and he went in there, and I had to have a treatment on my back. So I went to see this other doctor who had prescribed the digitalis. And because I was taking care of him, I asked him about the aspirin as compared to Coumadin. We had quite a frank conversation. He was very wonderful in telling me everything. And I said, does it have any reaction on metabolism? No, he said it doesn't. I said, well, it does relax you. He said, yes, it does. I said, well, isn't it a fact? If you take the aspirin without the digitalis, that the heart action isn't sufficiently strong to overcome it, and that's why the water goes into the lungs? Yes, he said. So you see how truly God had spoken to me. So then he also gave him a diuretic to help to take the water out of the system. And last night when we left, the color was back in his cheeks. He was able to walk outdoors, take a walk. He went downtown. And in his eyes is a light of God that is so great because of this healing that I can't begin to tell you how beautiful it was. And he is one of the deacons of the Methodist Church, and he has stayed there because I have told him I thought it was the right thing to do because he asked me a long time ago. And he is able to give to this Orthodox congregation the real truth of the Christian teachings. They don't accept it all. But just before all of this happened, they were going to have a prayer council all over the world. And he suggested to them that they put forth the effort, this small church, to lead the world in a pray unceasingly movement. And it wasn't taken up at the moment. But after the miraculous healing he had in the hospital, which amazed the whole hospital staff, they couldn't believe their eyes after the condition he was in, under oxygen for a full week, that this was the same man, the church sat up and took a little notice. And we understood from several people that for 3 Sundays straight, he had given sermons on prayer. This is the way God works to do his will. And you see, it is time, because there is a time for everything, a season for everything. And in all the things it says in this chapter, you can see the workings of duality. And that man must do everything in its own good time. He must constantly keep his full attention upon God. He must go inward in order to find God, because Jesus has said that God and the kingdom of heaven are within. And he made this statement, "Know ye not that ye are gods?" This is the truth. You are God in human form. But until you realize the divinity within your own being, until you realize your oneness with this eternal, infinite spirit, then you remain, as it says in here, as beasts, because it is the human ego that acts and gives in to its desires, even as the beast unconsciously does this. But man is born with that special gift of consciousness, that special gift of judgment, of reason, of intelligence, where he can go within himself and find his real self, which is to say God. He can become a great being of light. He can become a fisher of men. I was very proud to have Kathy give a sermon to you last Sunday. We've had our ups and downs, as I hear she told you, over the years. But she has been a great soul. And way back in 1960 in New York, I had a tremendous vision of Kathy. And she appeared to me as the mother of the world. And she was huge. She is a big woman, I know, big frame. But she's beautiful. And this great mother love was shown to me that was in her. And I knew that even though this soul, as many do, was giving me a bad time, that here was a great soul. And that one day, if I had infinite patience and love within me, that this which was within her and which God showed me would come forth and manifest. And now, as some of you know, she has been going through an experience similar to the one I went through in India, but very infinitesimal, and everything with her is beautiful, which I am indeed grateful for, because mine was quite the opposite, I can assure you. I have never suffered such pain, nor do I ever expect anyone to suffer such pain. And she is bearing out what I have told you. Many think that because I have explained to you the things on my own path, my own God realization, the things which have happened to me, that you're going to have to go through the same thing. Some shy away from it in fear. But I have told you over and over and over again, and I repeat it. You will not have to go through what I went through, because this was a special thing that God asked of himself in me. A very special thing, and which was done on a universal basis. And therefore it was the individual experience multiplied a million times or more. How else could I teach you the truth unless I went through all of it in the same way that it is pictured that the Christ went through in there? A man can only expect the fruits of his labors, as it says in Ecclesiastes here. And whatever you put forth, this is what you reap. Whatever you sow, you reap. And so as long as he's content with just the fruit of his labors, as long as he eats, drinks, and is merry, he does the things that he wants to, he takes his pleasure, but also he takes his pain, this is the way God will arrange it. But the real individual, the real soul, that wants God more than anything in the world, that is willing to offer himself, all that he calls his own, all that he possesses, at the feet of God for his service, that one then will rise above this animal state, which is the human ego. And he will become the Holy Ghost, or the divine ego, that one which still lives in a human body, but there is nothing there but God. There is no time on, or there is no instance anywhere where a truly devout and spiritual soul will not be tested. You will be tested about your love for God. You will be tested about your love for the Christ. You will be tested about your love for your guru. I can assure you that this is true, because I was myself for 3 long years, and I went through hell with it. Because for 18 years I had been so glued to my master that nothing or nobody was important to me but God in him. And then all of a sudden, he tested me. He didn't say a word to me. He didn't turn me away. He was just as loving. He was just as concerned as he had always been. But all of a sudden, I just felt this division, and I was devastated. I wondered what I had done, and I didn't realize what he was doing. No word was spoken. So I went down to Encinitas, and I literally threw myself on the bed and cried. And I searched through the Bible to try to find comfort. No matter where I looked, I couldn't find it, because I was no longer at one with my guru. So when I finally went back to Mount Washington, I was paralyzed, as I had been once before. And he happened to be away that day. And so one of the sisters there came in and talked to me. And they massaged me all day. Nothing happened. I was just as cold and as rigid as could be. So finally Master came back about 7:15 that evening. And they told him immediately of my plight. And he sent word down to me that he would pray for me, but that he would not see me that night. And within 10 minutes, I felt the blood coursing through my veins just like a molten river of whatever. It was just on fire. And for the first time, I could move my limbs. So the next night, he called me in from dinner. As a matter of fact, I'd only started to eat. It was about 6:30. And we talked for hours upon hours. And he took his shoes off and he asked me if he could be comfortable. I said, of course. And so we talked, and he told me many things which made me understand an awful lot that I hadn't been able to understand before. And he questioned me very closely about what had brought this on. And when I told him, he said a very strange thing. If you had not been affected, I would not have seen you again. So this was what I had to live with. And he had dealt with some people in a way that I, as a human being, didn't approve of. And I thought, why does he have to do this? Here he's God, realized. I just don't get this. So I asked him about it. And he said that through my intercession, he would grant both the people involved special dispensation, which he did. But apparently they followed it up later. I have come to know, since I am in the position where I am now, not to question what a God-realized soul does, ever. I have understanding now of what my master was and what he did. And that in everything that he did, he was going not according to his own whims, his own human will, but he was going according to God's direction alone. He was doing that which was best for the individual. They needed that test. They needed it. They needed whatever was handed out to them. And so did I. And then that same evening, all of a sudden, he took me in his arms as I was ready to leave. And he kissed me right at the Christ Center. And I was filled with bliss, as though I had had oceans of wine or liquor to drink. Only it was ecstatic. I was as one drunk. And when I turned away from him, I could scarcely walk. And so as I got to the door, he said, Mildred. I turned around and I looked at him in a very dazed way and I said, yes, sir. And he smiled at me so sweetly. And he said, I just wanted to look at you once more. That was the last time I saw him as I had known him for 3 long years. And while he never said a word to me, he put me through inwardly such tests, such experiences as you wouldn't believe. But you see, my love for God was greater than my love for myself. My love for my guru stood out above my love for anybody or anything. Because I knew that he alone was the bridge between myself and the infinite. That without him I could go no place, do nothing. Because I knew that he knew God. And that he could help me to that ultimate end. And the fact that after his passing, I went to India, not to go to another guru, to another master, but to get help for the work that my own guru had done. I thought I could get it so that what he had written, what he had set up, could be saved, and I found out that that wasn't God's will at all. He answered my prayer for his work, but the way he answered it was to put me totally through the crucifixion in order that I might get my own God realization, that I might become that truth which he had taught, so that they could throw all of the scriptures, all of the lessons, all of the teachings, or burn them. They could throw them away or burn them, or they could be put in water. It didn't make any difference. Totally destroyed. And still, because my love for God and my guru was great enough, I came through that tremendous ordeal, even unto death. And I stand before you now, so that I can tell you the living truth of what you are in God. It's tremendous. Now, each of these things happened at its own time. The great thing that I did was to have total faith in God, in my guru. Because to me, in the beginning, my beginnings were one in an Orthodox church, and And the whole religious theme was on heaven, hell, and purgatory, and the church mortgage. That's the truth. Time after time, I heard that. And so, I had no idea, none whatsoever, of any of the things that I am now able to tell you. I had never read about them, except I read Christ's experience in the Bible to some degree. I had never met anybody beside my master, and I was not interested in going to anybody else, in reading anything, even, because I was so loyal to him. But it was through that, through putting God and Guru above myself, in complete and total faith and surrender, that I am able to give you the real truth of the Christian scriptures, and to tell you that I'm not the only one, as it has been presented, that Jesus the Christ, who lived 2,000 years, was the only one as far as the whole Christian faith is concerned, but that the Christ is in every one of you, eternally living. In fact, he is that life, that power, that intelligence which is within you. Without him, you cannot move, nor live, nor breathe, nor have your being. We do nothing of ourselves, not one God blessed thing. But I gave him only this love. I was so busy with the experiences of my life, which were so tremendous at that time, that I couldn't sit in meditation, but my whole life was meditation, because my love for my guru and for God in him, and the God that he told me to know, taught me to know, was inside myself, was so great that always I was meditating upon him, no matter what I was doing, whether I was getting a meal or scrubbing a floor or washing diapers or whatever it was. God was there, and my guru was alongside of me. And finally, when I was in Washington, D.C., after his passing, and I saw the devastation which had come about in the 2 years since that time, I sat in my hotel room and I cried my eyes out for about 2 hours. And I prayed to God to use me in some way that I could right this terrible wrong, so that all the years that he had spent would not be in vain. And so this is what he did to me. This is what he did for me. And I regret not one tiny bit of it. I would go through every bit of it again to be able to teach you and to tell you that truth, which in truth you are. This is all God's life. Every bit of it. And you are that. There is nothing but God anywhere. And when you go up into the mountain of your own being, and you come face to face with that great light of your own soul, that living reality which is God or the Christ within you, you will know that I speak the truth. Kathy is learning that every single thing that I have told you throughout the years is coming to pass in her own spiritual experience, and it is a beautiful thing to watch. As I say, I am very proud of her. She's just like a little child. And she calls me up now and she tells me about her experiences, and she always prefaces it, "Mother, this is your little child speaking." She called me down in Tillamook. She called me this morning. She had asked my permission to go to a Catholic seminary in Tacoma on a retreat. And I told her to follow whatever God directed her to do at this point. So she went over there, and she's having a tremendous experience. And she called me up this morning to tell me that she is being a fisher of souls for me. That this, I think she's the only Protestant over there, she said. And that she's going around telling everybody the truth about the teachings of their own religion. And so now we come to the priest. And so she had a talk with him. And she told him about me. She's been giving my name, my telephone number to everybody. How many will call me, I don't know, but this is what she's doing. And she had this talk with the priest. She told him what I had told her. And she said he sat there with tears rolling down his cheeks, because finally somebody had given him the truth of his own religion. Don't you see how God is using her? Because now she has surrendered to him. How beautiful, how wonderful it is. So, some had even asked and said that they want to come over and see me. So she's following God's direction within her, and he's leading her every step of the way, and all she can say to me, "Mother, it's so beautiful. Why don't you try it?" Like she is. When the time comes that you're ready to surrender yourself at the feet of God, to accept in faith that which God, the Guru, tells you, then things will start to happen. I had a tough time trying to get her to take the Sunday school class, and wind can bear out the fact that I talked to her till 3 o'clock one morning, and finally she agreed, reluctantly, yet she wanted to do it. But when she got into it, this is when the experience started. When she let go and let God, it's tremendous. And then I had no more than hung up this morning when I got another call. Just before I left for Oregon, a woman whom I had met one time briefly 3 years ago in Bremerton called me long distance on the telephone, told me she had to go into the hospital the next day for a gallbladder operation. They had taken x-rays and there was every indication that there was also a cancerous condition in the duodenum, I guess that's what they call it. And I talked to her for about an hour over the telephone, and she said that of all the people she had met, and she was a member of the Unity Church over there, and she's a very devout soul, she said it seemed to her that she was now in the position of knowing that I alone could help her, that I alone had the truth. Now, I didn't do any of this, you understand. God doesn't. Because I haven't heard her. I thought of her many, many times. And while I got the name and address of another woman whom I met that day, I didn't get this woman's. And so I told her that I would be with her in spirit, that she would be perfectly all right. So this morning she called me, and she was ecstatic. They had performed the operation, and even where there was indication that there was trouble, the gallbladder was removed, but the indication of trouble, as far as the cancer was concerned, had disappeared totally. They had found every part of her, except this gallbladder, in perfect condition. So she called to thank me. So I said to her, as Master said to me one time when I fell down at his feet and thanked him for saving my life, which he has done not once but many times, he said, "Mildred, God is so wonderful. Let us both thank him." And this is my feeling. Let us all thank him for every blessing that we have. Because the awakening is coming. This is the beginning of the last time when all must go back to God. You are not here with me at this moment without a purpose. I don't care how young or how old you are. If you surrender yourself to God this moment, he can use you and he will use you. But it is more than just the service to him that you will get. In this service, you will get your own God realization. Through teaching, you learn. Through teaching, you realize the beauty and the glory of God. And you see how perfect his timing is, that wherever you are supposed to be, he will arrange it. But you have to listen to his inner voice, and you have to test that voice. Kathy was directed to go to the seminary, so he's using her in a beautiful way. I was directed to go to Tillamook, and it saved a man's life. I was directed to say to the woman over the telephone what I did, and her faith made her whole. And you walk every day with this constant miracle before you, timed perfectly in accordance with God's will. All you have to do is to make yourself ready, to put God before yourself, to make your love for him so great that you are willing to do anything, give up anything for him. And when you do that, you will find that you have given up nothing, that what you have relinquished is nothing, and that you have the everythingness of God, everything all over, because you are one with God in this whole universe, that every man is your brother because you have the one common Father. Regardless of race, color, creed, nationality, it doesn't make any difference. All are your brothers and your sisters. And if you will look, you will see God. You will see the light of God. You will see his hand working. And you will let him walk before you, lighting your way, instead of walking in front of him, trying to show him the way constantly. A great soul told me that one day, And I've used it many times because it is tremendous. To God, all things are possible. I have just witnessed the most tremendous miracle. Do you think that I as a human being could have done that? That I can take any credit or glory for it? I can assure you that I cannot. Not I, Mildred Hamilton. But God in me, as He is in you, is all-powerful. And all things work together for good for the one who loves God. If you will keep your mind on Him, if you will give Him your love and your devotion, you will find these miracles come to pass in your own life. And the things that you had reached out for in your desires will fall away, because you will find that your desire is only for Him, that within Him is contained all that you ever desired, and more. But you don't have the headaches and the problems with it. You have peace, and you have love, and you have wisdom, and you have power. You have whatever you need at any moment to call upon. I extended myself this week to the point where it was beyond the strength that this physical body had. And yet look at the power that's coming out of it right now. I could scarcely get on my feet this morning. I could scarcely move when Mary came after me yesterday, because I had given all my strength that her father might live. But look what He's doing. He, not I. I am not the body. Neither are you. We are the infinite spirit, God within us, that is all of this life. And it's tremendous. There is a story I have told down through the years, and I love to tell it. It's about an old woman called Becky Hampton. Aunt Becky was very, very ancient, and she was very wrinkled. And she had rather a wild light in her eyes. And she used to roam in the streets. And she did all kinds of queer things, mutterings and that sort of thing. And so people thought that really she was insane. And so finally, because she started roaming the streets at night, although she didn't harm anyone, everybody started to talk about it because they were fearful that she would harm herself. And of course, there are always people that want to put people like that in mental institutions, not realizing who and what they are. And so, this was the case with Aunt Becky Hampton. So finally, some of the good citizens got hold of her and took her before a group of three doctors, a Dr. Howie, a Dr. Smith, and a Dr. Franklin. So they gave her every test. And little old Aunt Becky knew exactly what they were trying to do. She knew that they were trying to put her in an institution, and she didn't like it. And so she listened to all of the things that they were saying, the judgments they were making. And finally, the judge says to her, "Have you anything to say for yourself?" So her face lit up with some sort of hope. She thought maybe she would have a chance of escaping this destiny which they were placing upon her. And she looked very appealingly at the doctors, and she examined first one and then the other, their faces. Finally, she came to Dr. Franklin's face, and as she looked at him, there was a sort of wistful appeal in his face, in her face, as though she would ask for his help. And all she said, "I don't want to go to no place. I just want to live my life." So the doctors went into consultation. Two of the doctors had already made up their mind that she was insane, that she should be committed to this institution. But the other one said nothing. And Dr. Smith said, "Surely, Dr. Franklin, you can't hold out against it." And he said, "Well, my friends," he said, "I'm going to tell you a strange story about me. I know that you two are the majority. You can carry the vote." But he said, "I want to tell you a story about Aunt Becky Hampton." He said, "Many, many, many years ago, in the backwoods, there lived a young man and his wife. And the wife was pregnant. And she was in rather a bad way because it came time for her delivery. And she was in terrible pain. Finally, she could stand it no longer, and she said, 'John, you must go and see the doctor. Go and get a doctor.' Well, the doctor lived miles away from there, and he knew that she would be dead before he was able to get back. And he said, 'Well, I'll go get Aunt Becky Hampton and let her stay with you till I can get a doctor.' And so he left her alone with a prayer on his lips that God would take care of her until he arrived back. And he went to Aunt Becky Hampton's, and she said, 'John, you go on your bay mare She said, and I will cut across the woods and I will get there faster than you. But she said, in the meantime, it will save you the time of taking me. So when she got there, which was only an hour later, John had gone and gotten the doctor and brought him back. And so the woman was in such terrific pain that she said she would die if she were not relieved. And the doctor said, well, it will be 2 or 3 hours yet. He said, she will die unless... He said, there's a preparation they call twilight sleep right now that can be injected into her. But he said, I want to warn you that it's dangerous to the baby. And many times the baby is born dead. But they had no choice because it was the mother's life involved. And so they finally gave her this. And a short time later, this little baby was born. It was absolutely blue. The doctor picked it up, he shook it, and he slapped it. And it gave just a feeble little croak, and then nothing. It lay lifeless. And he worked and worked. He blew his breath in the baby's mouth and worked over it, nothing. So finally he took the baby and gave it to the mother, and he said, I'm very sorry, but your baby is dead. Aunt Becky Hampton had a wild light in her eyes. She says, Tain't so. And he said, you cannot say that there is a speck of life in this baby. Tain't so, she said. God gave life and he can give it again. And he takes it away and he can bring it back again. And so she started working. And she says, John, get me a pan of cold water and a pan of medium lukewarm water. And she took that child and she dipped it first into one pan and then in the other, and muttering over it all the time. And the doctor thought that surely they shouldn't let this insane woman do anything about this child. But she was absolutely out of her mind because there was no life in it. And so finally he said, well, there's nothing more I can do here. I'm going to depart. So he left. But Aunt Becky kept on. And she kept muttering and praying and muttering and praying and dipping the baby and rubbing it. And finally, all of a sudden, her face changed. And there was a great light of expectancy. The father could see no change in the child. But just then, he saw this flicker of light. And as he leaned forward, the words were choked in his throat because he heard a lusty cry. And she took the baby up, she spanked it, she rubbed it some more, and hugged it to her bosom, and then she took this baby, all pink and glowing with life, and laid it in mother's arms. So he said, that is my story, gentlemen. He said, well, that happened many years ago, but how in the world can you say that this old freakish woman who did this muttering is the same woman now? Certainly she is insane. There can be no truth to that story, really. Who was the individual? He said, gentlemen, he said, I want to tell you that as long as I live, I will resist you. He said, because I will continue to support Aunt Becky Hampton, the same as I have all of these years, so that she may wander around and do as she wishes. Because he said, the truth is, gentlemen, that I am that child whom she saved. So the three doctors went out and appeared before the judge. And Aunt Becky Hampton was given a clean bill of health and was permitted to roam the streets and live her own life and continue her muttering prayers to God. God is so wonderful. So wonderful. I ask you to make the effort to dedicate your lives to Him so that you too may know and realize the wonder and the beauty and the glory of your own very self, God within you.